Now, my panel have been patiently waiting for me, so just another moment to wait, because I want to have a quick listen back to some of the key highlights and lowlights of this campaign.
I think it's important that, you know, the City Council and, you know, the Lord Mayor, who's politically responsible for the City Council, should make a statement.
It's extraordinary that a teacher would call on the Lord Mayor to make a statement about some terrible tragedy like that. That's not how I would do politics.
Have you ever taken illegal drugs?
You know, I answered that question in a hot press interview about 12 or 13 years ago, and I answered it truthfully.
Which is?
Which is?
The answer that you did?
Yes, but it was obviously a long time ago.
If we vote for you, do you promise to be upright, decent, and honest, to have our best interests at heart?
Fianna Fáil was and is the party of property developers, and Fine Gael is the party of landlords.
Probably the most gruesome, grotesque murder that I can think of, and to have it perpetrated against a 17-year-old is just particularly beastly.
I don't have a term strong enough to express my deep, deep anger and upset at those remarks.
The comments that Catherine made were offensive. They were ignorant and they were wrong. The apology, I think, is very sincere.
If you believe that banks that turn profits of in excess of $2 billion should pay no corporation tax, fair play to you, I strongly disagree.
Putting Micheál Martin and Fianna Fáil back in charge of our economy would be like asking John Delaney to take over the FAI again in 9 years' time.
And that was, of course, Leo Varadkar finishing that montage of... What do you realise when you listen to it, actually, is a lot of misspeaking. That most of the banana skins were things that were said that shouldn't have been said by the people themselves. Of course, some of you have been involved in actual planning of election campaigns. So talk to me about how you go about that. Like, to what degree can you really plan a campaign, you know, a few weeks out? And to what degree are you always blown off course? Liam?
I think it's
I should just tell people it was
your
election, the election campaign you
My
planned
election was...
was
one of the most unsuccessful elections for any party anywhere. We worked with the Greens on the 2011 election when they were wiped out. So you could say that that I can learn from our mistakes.
But was it a mass extinction event?
It was the mass extinction. But what was interesting then is that you knew that they would be coming back, because that's what they were getting on the doors, is not this time. So actually, while you knew it was a very, very bad election, and knew you were going into it, that no matter what you did, that it was going to be a very, very difficult and challenging election, and that there was a wipeout that you were facing. But I think, just kind of bringing it back a bit, it depends in terms of the larger parties. If you're one of the larger parties, you know, when you're working on it, you're trying to boss the pitch, you know, trying to define the election and essentially run it and actually define what's going to be debated on a day-by-day basis. When you're a smaller party, you're trying to make interventions. You're trying to get in and make relevance. So that's where you see those strategies and the different strategies. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. This election, for the two larger parties, it didn't. But you have had history, you know, previous elections where it has. And then there are other parties where you're actually riding a wave, and that's what you have to do. And you have to try and not fall off that wave.
You would have been... involved in strategizing, I assume, for one of those bigger parties, wanting to set out what
it's
would be spoken.
Fianna Fáil.
Yes,
I wanted you
to say it yourself, Gerard Howland. Which you would—that'd be going back to
97, 2002, and 2007. But I mean,
so three very successful elections for Fianna Fáil.
Well, the first half of the third election was dire, frankly. But it came right in the end. But I mean, talking to Liam Reid and I about election campaigns, it's like talking to old soldiers what the army was like when they had cavalry. It has so completely changed. It's not just social media and wider culture, but the political firmament and architecture is gone. So the idea of a big party bossing the pitch, that's over, because it simply doesn't have the footprint, the size, the capacity. And of course, the pitch was bossed, to use that excellent phrase, successfully, effectively, by Fianna Fáil in 97 and in 2002, and eventually at the end in 2007. We're never going to see that again. It completely failed to happen because it logistically wasn't possible in this election. And I think, I have to say, I think the first couple of weeks of this election was the most boring, airless humorless, uninteresting campaign I can remember. I just delighted Barry Lennon this evening, reminding me that elections could be fun. But of course, the moment of ignition was the publication of two polls together within 48 hours. And that was bonfire moment. And it's been electric since.
But I mean, has it been? I just don't recall this as a boring election.
Well, to be fair, I mean, when you think that for the first week or so, the most exciting thing that happened was 12 seconds of silence when Leo Varadkar stumbled over that question about previous drug use. As far as I can remember from the first week, I mean, there were the big headline issues like the awful incident with the homeless man at the canal and that the horrible, dreadful, as he said, beastly murder of that young man. But in terms of, I guess just listening to you there, Gerard, I think I read this quote from somebody at the beginning of this campaign as well, saying, you know, you get the boat shipshape and then you push it out to sea and you have no way of controlling what happens to it after that as the director of a campaign. And as you say, Katie, you know, the memorable moments that you played there were the missteps, were the, you know, somewhere in the background, there's a spin doctor with his head in his hands moment. And that's what makes the campaign unpredictable and interesting. But I agree with Gerard, it really didn't come to life until the polls began to shake things up in the last week or so.
But surely this is, Rory, from previous elections, I remember the similar thing happening in the 2016 election when we had those series of polls in the middle week of the election, which started to confirm what was the sense on the ground, which was that Keep the Recovery Going was bombing. And again, and I'm wondering, are polls a danger to democracy to some degree? Because they completely, like election after election now, they completely dictate the course of the media discussion, the talk on the streets.
No, I wouldn't agree with you, actually. I think that the poll actually reflected what was going on in the ground, that actually the large political parties had little understanding of and little, or maybe they had some understanding, but like this election and in particular the rise of Sinn Féin has emerged from something that I and others have been going on about for a number of years, which is this housing crisis that was basically locking an entire generation out of affordable homes, and other social issues like repeal. We go back further, we had the water protest. If you go back further still at 2011, I was looking back at the polls, the Labour Party was receiving almost 30% of support at one point prior to the 2011 election. What we're seeing now, I think, is the legacy of austerity, those cuts that happened to health services, to the housing crisis. The Brexit masked a huge amount in terms of the anger that was building, the huge crisis that were happening to people in their daily lives. And we know that's why Fianna Fáil kept the government going for quite a while. And I think when the Brexit was moved away, then all these issues that had been going on suddenly were revealed. But people were feeling it. And I think that we're seeing a seismic shift. It's a generational shift. I think I've argued before that social contract with people in their 30s and 20s is broken in terms of what Ireland was offering. And I think that also what's really interesting is this generation now, this generation in their 40s, 30s, 20s, they care about things like homelessness, like direct provision, like the inequality, like the state of our country. And they're not just bought off in the way previous generations were by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's promises. I think we're seeing a seismic shift and change in not just in actually the people's public attitudes, which is slowly shifting into the politics.
Is this, Hugh, as Rory was saying there, like the slowest car crash in history, that this is the crash that the impact happened in 2009, and we are now seeing the absolute ultimate political fallout.
Well, I think we're still seeing the effects of that and the impact it's having. It's the reason why Fianna Fáil, I mean, you know, if the legacy of the crash was so bad, we might never put Fianna Fáil back in government again, and yet, despite everything, less than a decade after they ran the country off a cliff or were in government when the country went off a cliff, they I think, I expect, will be the largest party this after this election. Now, the issue will be that will they be in a position to form a government? Will they have sufficient numbers to put together a coalition? They're certainly not going to come back with a 2007 style result where there are a few seats but short and need to do a coalition
with
a small
party. We have a completely
party.
Changed political landscape, though. We have gone from decades of this two-and-a-half-party system to now three parties within a few points of each other. As I said, we're still
seeing the impact of that in the sense that, I mean, it's not cataclysmic in the sense for, you know, Fianna Fáil are coming back, but what we're seeing is that it's very slow, it's very gradual, and as Gerard said earlier, it's never going to be like it was before, where, you know, there was always a possibility that Fianna Fáil could be a single party government, majority government, and I think, you know, what you'll see this weekend is, notwithstanding the fact that Fianna Fáil will come out with more seats than anyone else, I think, you know, the two largest parties, the two civil war parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, will come back with maybe 45% at best. And that will be, you know, down again on what it was in 2016, which I think it was just under 50% or just 50% combined. So it's that kind of slow erosion of the two and a half party system. And into that space, we see in this election, you know, Sinn Féin have emerged as a serious political force. Now, we'll see how that manifests itself at the weekend. They could miss out on an awful lot of seats, but they could pick up an awful lot of seats that they weren't expecting.
And of course, when things start going right, they can go very, very right. But when things start going wrong, It can be near wipeout.
Ask yourself, who has the momentum going into this weekend? Mm. And you could argue that no one really has the momentum after this week. You know, Sinn Féin definitely had it last week, but have they taken a hit off the back of very negative, you know, stuff happening to them this week? Fianna Fáil have had a very middling, poor campaign, in my view. Fine Gael are just, you know, struggling with the fact they've been in government for a decade.
Mm. Rory, what about that Sinn Féin controversy that's you know, been centre stage for a few days now about Paul Quinn and how they handled that whole issue? The kind of people who were saying for the first time, I'm going to vote for Sinn Féin because of their housing policy or because of their tax policy, whatever. Are they going to be bothered by these issues, you know, that seem so removed?
I think that there's no doubt, I think it will hit them. It will affect them. I think that there is perhaps people of older generations who might have considered shifting them, or maybe who mightn't have been as strong or concerned about the childcare housing issues, maybe. But I do think that those who are, like, and I was just looking at the poll there, breakdown, in terms of support for Sinn Féin, and I was looking at the different age categories. And yes, in the 25 to 35 age group, Sinn Féin is at 30%. But in the 35 to 45 age category, Sinn Féin is also at close to 30%. And I think for those people, you know, and I'm in the demographic of people who are, you know, struggling with childcare costs, you know, housing for, you look, where are my children going to get housing? You know, people are in, you know, we've got people overcrowded in, you know, middle class households, no prospects of their kids getting a home. They're going, what, you know, who are we going to vote for? They want change. And I don't think that these issues, which are in a way legacies of the past, of course they're still with us, but they are legacies of the past.
And they're not that long ago now, this particular one, to be fair.
No, and I, you know, I'm not getting into that because I've never been involved in it. I'm not a defender of it in any way, shape or form.
But you're saying, you don't think that that's going to...
I don't think, because I think a lot of the generation who are saying... The question, biggest question will be whether that generation gets out and votes.
Yeah.
And whether working class communities get out and vote. If they do, in what I'm hearing, the numbers that they say they are, then it is going to be a seismic change.
It's going to be a change, but are people voting for change, or are they just voting for novelty? Because
I think they're voting for the health crisis that is just affecting so many people in so many ways, the housing crisis, the childcare issue.
I know, but who has the answers? Who can you be 100% certain if you change, if you go for change now and the government says, well, we are in midstream, you know, we have taken you from the crash in 2011 to full employment. You know, you want to be pretty certain that what you are replacing them with have better answers. And I didn't see that the other night when Mary Lou MacDonald, impressive a performer as she is, to answer a question to the effect of how are you going to build 100,000 houses? Where are you going to get the construction staff, by saying, well, we're ambitious?
Well,
sounded to
that
me
are offering,
pretty.
But is it they're offering more policies of the same, which are broadly, you know, more the private market, more get the house, try and pump up house prices more, in contrast to other parties who are saying we want rent freezes, or we want to build more public housing and make it available for lots of incomes. We want to provide public affordable childcare. People are looking at those things and saying, that's the type of society I want.
You can have 10% or 20% economic growth, but if we don't have a society that protects our vulnerable and that ensures everybody has access to affordable, quality childcare, housing and healthcare, that's not the type of country. We want that type of country. And I think that political shift, and I know Jared and others have seen this, that there is a shift to what you might call a broadly social democratic.
Can I just put you though, like you were saying, you looked at them, you were listening to what they were saying about housing and you were looking at the manifestos, whatever. But to what degree are we're in the zone which we saw so writ large in Brexit that people really are not that interested? The facts are not really having much of an impact. It's about a feeling, and the feeling is so strong for
change. But also, I
which
think,
is
I think
an abstract thing, but it seems to be.
I would just say this. I mean, there is a significant increase in what broadly called the left. I'm not quite sure what the left is, but I sense it's bigger, whatever it is, wherever it is. But be sure of this. A surge for Sinn Féin is not a surge left. Sinn Féin is on a rightward trajectory. So they're canning left seats and left votes to go into government eventually sometime with a centre or centre-right party. That's their strategy. They mugged the whole Right to Change movement in the last election to help them on the road. And they're going to cannibalise people to their left, who are real left, to do this further
now
in this election.
I am very conscious that I don't have a Sinn Féin representative here who I know would absolutely reject that.
Let me say
analysis
about Sinn Féin, by the way, I've no problem with them being in government. I think their time has come. I'd like to see that power face responsibility. I would also say this about people who are disaffected. They are not fundamentally left. They're disappointed Thatcherites who haven't gotten in to the home-owning democracy that made our parents comfortable for a generation. There's a lot of misunderstanding about what's happening.
But also, Dara, I do think, I heard a woman, can I just quote this woman, and she was picked at random by a Vox Popper, I think, on Morning Ireland yesterday, and she said, you know, and I really do think this sums up what is behind the momentum for change. She said, you know, the standards we are expected to meet as private citizens do not seem to be reflected in public office. And, you know, when you look back over several administrations, that would be the case. And I'm not just talking about, say, the Maria Baileys or the Dara Murphys or the Timmy Dooleys. It's the, you know, the printer, it's the children's hospital, it's the shrug of the shoulders when public funds are wasted and squandered. You know, errors and omissions and transgressions for which you would not hold your job for 5 minutes in the private sector, and yet you're kept on because your vote is needed or just because it suits somebody. And I think there is a growing sort of disaffection with that, and maybe that's where the impulse for change is coming from. The people are just sick of being taken for mugs. They don't even pay their Dáil bar bills. You know, I mean, that would not happen in any
But are they not just more enterprise sick of paying rents that are like double what they were paying 10 years ago?
If you look at it, and just looking at what is happening in Ireland, and I think there are two kind of things. We were an anomaly in one way, or an outlier, in that we had two very large parties in a proportional representation system. And what you've seen, as Jerry's pointed out, as Hugh and you've seen those parties getting fewer and fewer. On the continent where you have a proportional representation, you have far more, you know, far more smaller parties who have to coalesce. So what is going to happen in terms of this as we go into the 2020s? We're going to need to find ways of working, of parties working better together, both on left and right, as you try to form a majority to actually have a stable government that's going to last 5 years. The other thing, Katie, that you have as well, is that in terms of the anti-establishment vote that you've seen a kind of a move against the establishment. Sometimes it swings left in some countries, sometimes it has swung right as well. But what we're seeing in Ireland is a reflection of that. And it has kind of happened. It's jolted and it shifted, but we're seeing that as well. And I think what you're seeing, you know, a dissatisfaction and a desire for change here in Ireland, but you've seen that in other countries as well. So it's something we shouldn't be surprised about.
It's an international
about
phenomenon to some degree.
Yeah. And myself and Jared will go back and forth over this. I fundamentally disagree with his, you know, framing it there that, you know, people who are, you know, disappointed Thatcherites, that I think that, you know, when you look at it, for example, take childcare. You know, people at the moment who have young kids,
are being crippled by the cost of it. And we see and can see that in terms of a system, you need properly paid staff. They should be public servants. You should have a public childcare system. And this is not just a view held by those of us on the broad left. It is across the divide. And I think that this is the realisation. It was the same. The shift happened in terms
but
of...
Been, but
the,
for, no, we, wait, but we've been crippled with childcare costs for a certain...
No, no, but it's but you see, the shift... Yes, exactly. But the shift, I'll argue, has happened is it started emerging in the polls where people were saying around the budget, we don't want tax cuts, we want investment in public services. There was a shift to this idea that actually we need public services. We can't survive in a purely marketized society. People will just get lost and the most vulnerable are hit the hardest. So I think there has been this shift, and Gerard is arguing that Sinn Féin aren't a left party. You can argue back and forth, and of course people on the left argue who's left or not. But if you look at their policies, what they're presenting is you could describe as a broadly social democratic
I would say policy
agenda,
that we
which is
argue.
Also what the Greens are
yes,
offering,
and I
which is also
that.
What Labour are offering. And I think the real, in a way, tragedy of this election was that the left didn't come together and say, here is an alternative government. Sinn Féin was the only party that really put themselves out there and said,
but is this we'll not the perennial,
but
I would just make a single
point. With the exception of Solidarity and People Before Profit, all left parties, so-called, are going into polling day eyes right.
But do they have a choice?
No, but that's the point. They could try and coalesce. People like Rory have argued consistently that they should, but they're not. They've made a very self-conscious decision. They're marching forward eyes right. Now, that's left.
Well, I was going to say, you have mentioned People Before Profit have been out there arguing the case for...
And Solidarity. I'm clear about that, but the others, no.
And it is, I think, a big mistake that the parties... You see, the problem they were put in that Sinn Féin and the other significant change in this election has been Sinn Féin in the last general election ruled... They said they weren't going to talk, if I remember correctly, to Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael.
Unless they were going to be the lead
unless
party.
Unless they were going to be the lead party, yeah. Exactly. Whereas in this election, they said, we are open to talk to anybody and we want to be in government. And I think that actually did make a big shift as well, because they were no longer seen as just an opposition. They were seen as, OK, these are people who are serious about government. And I think that for people looking at an option, I think that in terms of the left parties, that what Brendan is saying, they've eyes right. And that has been part of the problem. They haven't said, we want to work together as a bloc and we will offer an alternative government. But they still have time after the election, depending on the votes.
But that point, the point you made there about, you know, that this set them apart to some degree, that they finally said, OK, we're willing to do it. Surely one of the things, the themes of this campaign was everyone saying repeatedly, day after day, that the one thing we're not going to do is talk to Sinn Féin or have Sinn Féin in government with us or in any way engage with Sinn Féin after the election. And surely, and that combined with the rumbling row about who would get to be on the big debates on television, does that all combine to make Sinn Féin the outsider, you know, knocking on the window trying to get in and, you know, put Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael even more closely aligned? Was that not a strategic error for the main parties?
Yes, simple answers, yes. I think if Mary Lou MacDonald had been in more debates with Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar sooner, those two parties would be in a better place. I think they've misjudged it, miscalled it, and I think they have inadvertently promoted their opponent.
Okay,
I think they saw coming into this election they didn't consider Sinn Féin to be a force based on the fact that electorally they've had a poor run, presidential election, the local and European elections, even the Westminster elections, their vote share collapsed. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it didn't collapse, but it dropped significantly in all constituencies bar one. So I think...
They would say there was a lot of tactical voting going on.
Sure,
yeah,
but I mean, what I would say is, I suppose, is that, you know, all of us coming into this election, including, you know, the likes of me and my, you know, my
and including Sinn Féin themselves,
including Sinn Féin themselves, yeah. And look at the number of candidates they're running. Only 42 didn't see this surge towards them, and I think that, you know, you are right. It is because it, you know, the election was fought on the grounds of, you know, the big two trying to lock out this party promising change. And this party, by the way, who has been promoting some pretty interesting policies that have got an awful lot of debate, particularly the idea of a rent freeze, and on the pension issue, they called it right, and all of the other parties have basically got behind them. I mean, that was one of the big issues of this campaign. I think I wouldn't say that it was a boring campaign. I think we had a few days where we had a substantial debate about a policy issue in terms of pensions and the affordability of bringing back the retirement age. But ultimately, all parties went with this.
And then everyone went back to the auction rooms and started banging the gavel.
The odd thing about left politics, insofar as I understand it at all, is you've got to build up the state and its capacity to deliver more services. But the left parties in Ireland competed with each other to reduce the capacity of the state to deliver anything.
That pension
issue was one of the most egregious, outrageous examples of that carry-on.
We'll come back to this, but I do have to take a break.
Email latedebate@rte.ie.
And you're welcome back. Just a couple of tweets and texts. Kieran Crowley's tweeting, "You've got to hand it to Barry Lenehan's election coverage on Late Debate. His words per second increases beautifully as he gets all the information in on time, making the race to the Dáil sound like it's an actual race." Well, I think it is an actual race for all those involved in it. And so say all of us there as regards Barry's coverage. Literally no one cares if Leo ever took drugs, says. I think that's in relation to that clip we had in the montage, I think. "I feel a bit sorry for the Labour Party. Had they not entered coalition with Fine Gael, they might well be now the dominant opposition party that Sinn Féin have become." That's one for the discussion. Yeah, and then a lot of people are talking about not having canvassers. Usually people complain about the canvassers, but I've seen more and more complaints this year about canvassers not actually coming or knocking on the door, but shoving things through the letterbox. Somebody said, "I only had two call on the door. The rest came in the post, which I threw in the bin without reading," says Marie N. Gorey. It's not just the young. "I'm 67. I'm voting Sinn Féin. My children have no future in Ireland with the current government." Going back to the campaign itself, you think Fine Gael had a good campaign, Hugh?
Yeah, I mean, like 2016 was a disastrous campaign from start to finish, from Enda Kenny's kind of first press conference where he didn't want to get into economic jargon and Michael Noonan had to bail him out to let's keep the recovery going. This time, it's clear they were more organised, they had a better strategy, they had more clear and consistent messaging. Their slogan's a bit naff, a future to look forward to. But, you know, I think Leo Varadkar has performed exceptionally well in the debates, and I think that Fine Gael has majored on the issues that it's best at and which polling data, or all polls rather, in the last two or three years have shown that, you know, they go up in the polls when they talk about these issues, and Brexit is obviously central to that. The issue is, there's two issues as I see it. It's the timing of the election is not great for them because Brexit is, for a lot of voters, sorted.
Put to bed a bit, yeah.
Well, for now. Won't be saying that in the summer. But so there's that. And I think as well, the other issue is the weather is very poor, is very bad. It's cold, it's miserable, it's dark.
But the weather is bad for everybody.
I think that Leo Varadkar was right when he talked about Bertie Ahern preferred to campaign in the summer. And that paid off for Bertie. And I think it possibly would have paid off for Leo Varadkar as well. But I also think that the biggest problem afflicting Fine Gael is they are nearly 10 years in office and I think people have just had enough of them. And it's, you know, they might have had a change of leader and Leo Varadkar might be banging on about the fact he's only been in office for 2.5 years, but he has been a senior government minister for the last 9 years. So has Simon Coveney, so has Richard Bruton. So these are the faces we've been seeing for this last decade. And
but they're losing to a leader who was in cabinet for 14 years.
Yeah,
and there when the whole country fell down around our ears.
Who has completely reinvented himself and reinvented his party. Let's be honest here. Like Fianna Fáil has moved back to its kind of centre-left roots, away from the kind of Galway tents, you know, kowtowing to the property developers. And they've gone with one of the purest politicians we've ever come across. I mean, I don't think at this stage there is a skeleton in Micheál Martin's closet. And you couldn't say that about a lot of his predecessors in Fianna Fáil.
Gerard Howlin.
Well, a third term is a very rare thing. Besides 2007, the last time it happened was Sean Lamass in 1965, which is not recently. So that's a very steep incline for Leo Varadkar to lead.
But he must have felt there was a good chance there, because like 2007, we're coming into this having put the economy back together, more people at work than ever before, Brexit, sorted to some degree. So they must have felt they had a good story to tell. But
they did, and perhaps they do, but I think timing is an issue. I accept Leo Varadkar had to call the election when he had. He had run out of road. The numbers simply didn't allow him to go on any further. That's a truth, right? Were it not for one of his TDs opting to go to the European Parliament, obviously with his blessing and permission, and another going to a job in Europe, that wouldn't have been necessary. And if he had been able to hold on till April or May, and Fianna Fáil would be part to facilitate that, Brexit would have been the big backdrop again. The weather would have been better, and that weather issue, because there's two issues about February. One is the weather, we're at our lowest psychologically this time of the year. We're also broke at this time of the year. All the bills have had to be paid. So on every metric, February is not good. You want to catch the people in a reasonably good mood, and you need a bit of sunshine, and you need to have them recovered from the extra expenditure of the winter a bit. And Brexit would have been the best backdrop in April or May. And if he'd held his parliamentary party together, and I mean, he made a decision to allow one to go for the European Parliament, and then Darren Murphy did what he did, and that's the Fine Gael story.
But also the Saturday, I mean, I don't know what you think the impact of the Saturday voting, which is the first time, I think, since
1918,
yeah. That there's been Saturday voting. So, I mean, what that may potentially offset any weather-related or, you know, ennui general.
Yeah,
ennui
maybe.
But how do you think the leaders have done?
I agree with Hugh. I think that Leo has performed particularly well. I thought, particularly at the last debate, actually, I think their big mistake, as you said, Gerard, was not to have Mary Lou MacDonald in earlier. I don't know if that was necessarily their call.
To the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil,
wasn't their call.
But it didn't favour them, and they didn't call for her in earlier, which was, you know...
The perception that they were, you know, at a time when we've seen huge international change on the political scenes, not always for the better, of course, but to be offered what appeared to be a choice of basically, you know, beef or salmon. You know, after all these years, that is basically what it boils down to.
If you
don't want Fianna Fáil, it's got to be Fine Gael. So, you know, take your pick. They've both been knocking around for donkey's years.
So you went for the vegan option.
Exactly. Yeah, they went for the vegan option. And even in circumstances where green is no longer, you know, it's no longer cutting edge, it's no longer cool it's to vote green. And Fine Gael, I think, Sinn Féin, have stepped into that gap. They've stepped into that the need for change and the willingness for people maybe to pursue change without any real certainty as to where it's going to lead, which is a bit worrying.
Liam Reid, the Greens. Mm-hmm. Like we were dead from talking about the Greens during the local and European elections. Everywhere you went, you stuck a microphone in front of somebody. They were talking about climate being so important for them, the number one issue, my children's future. And it was so highly anticipated that this was going to be a rerun of that, that it maybe even would be more sharper focus. But it was the green wave was pretty low key throughout this.
I think the Greens have had a solid, if you look at the polls.
They're rock solid between 8 and 10 polls. Yeah.
I think a couple of things happening. If you look at, say, the UK election, climate change was the number one issue. But actually, when push came to shove, voters, they didn't vote on climate change. They voted on Brexit and getting Brexit done. It is really difficult for climate change to feature sometimes in an election, and also when an election is covered as a horse race as well. It struggled in terms of, you look at the debates, it was towards the end that it was asked. But I can guarantee you this, that as we move in to this year, we will be talking about international trade and Brexit. We will so be talking about climate change for the next decade. And we will be talking about housing and about health. It will be one of the issues that's going to define the next decade. And yes, we're not talking. And we will wonder in 5 years as to why we weren't talking about climate change more in this election.
OK, let's talk, because we don't have that much time left. What's going to happen after this? After those boxes, those votes are counted. And who do we believe in terms of I'm not talking to them?
Both leaders, because I think they've said so much. I mean, particularly Micheál Martin, he's staked his entire political reputation on not going into government with Sinn Féin, rather. So,
what did Pat Rabbit say about election promises?
Yeah.
What was the phrase?
But I think that was more in relation to actual.
Sure,
politics.
Isn't that don't what you agree. Say during an election?
Yeah.
I think
promises.
He disputes the really context expect. Of that. Yeah. So just
I
to
think,
say
I
that,
I think it would be very difficult internally for both leaders to. First of all, on a personal level, Micheál Martin has, as I say, staked his entire political reputation on not doing a deal with Sinn Féin. So I don't think that's going to happen. Now, there are people in his own party who think it should be done. So that will be an interesting internal dynamic.
Could it be done without
dynamic.
Micheál Martin at the helm?
That's an interesting internal dynamic. I'm not sure it could be. And in Fine Gael, I think there are people in Fine Gael who are just dead set against it and would never stand for it and won't do it. So I think that after the election, it's going to be my sense is it's going to be a bit messy. I don't think Fianna Fáil are going to have that kind of critical mass of 60 seats to be in a position to form a government with smaller parties and independents. Therefore, I think you're going to get a situation where nobody has a clear pathway to government. We have weeks and weeks and weeks of attempts to make deals. And then eventually we might have to get back into a situation where Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael get in a room and do a deal like they did in 2016.
And this time Fianna Fáil...
Fianna Fáil in government and Fine Gael in power. Or maybe the Grand Coalition option, although we might be in one more electoral cycle.
But would that not be the worst possible scenario for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to have Sinn Féin sitting over there?
It will be Sinn Féin winning Euro millions, a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael coalition.
Would they prefer to go back out onto the streets again?
I think they would, because I think if they go in or they prop one another up, they're going to continue the dynamic that's seen them diminished collectively over the last few years. They've got to pull apart. They can only do that if they have enough of others. I think Hugh is right. Unless Fianna Fáil is in the high 50s, tipping 60, the cup which it will win will be one full of manure, frankly. And it's going to be very difficult to get anything out of it. Where they're going to go after that. One thing I'd like to signal is the Labour Party. There's a theory that if Fianna Fáil isn't the high 50s, tipping 60, somehow it's the Greens and Labour.
You're going to have a problem within Labour.
But you're going to have a big problem within Labour. Because if the Greens are bigger than Labour, and Eamon Ryan has tarnished it, psychologically this is very difficult for a Labour parliamentary party of 6, 7, 8 seats, and I think it would be a very, very big debate in Labour.
You could have a split in the Labour Party where there are people who want to go into government and they break away from the actual Labour Party itself. Now, maybe I'm being a bit fanciful at that, but... certainly, I think Brendan Howland is desperate to get back into government, but I think there's an awful lot of people in his party who would rather sit this one out.
Well, memories are still very raw in terms of what happened the last one.
Like, Labour will come back, but it was always a two-election job. It could be a three-election job now at this stage, and they definitely will need a new leader to grow again.
Yeah, I think it's difficult. It's very difficult to tell what's going to happen in terms of the permutations. And I would not, you know, looking at governments and the main two political parties and how they've broken promises down the years, I wouldn't put anything past any of them. But I think for the left parties, particularly Sinn Féin, the decision they make about going into coalition or not will determine their future. And I don't think they're stupid enough to see what happened to Labour and jump into coalition with Fianna Fáil, I think. And I think that the from a broadly left perspective, in terms of those arguing we need a big change, the ideal would be that the Labour Party, the Green Party, Sinn Féin, the Social Democrats...
So let's say... No, but hang on a minute. 15 for the Greens.
But wait, no. They're not going to get enough. They're not going to get enough, unlikely to offer an alternative government, but to actually act as a coherent bloc. And so that they're not picked off in another one, be it the Greens or Social Democrats, prop up another Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael government, because that will disillusion voters who are looking for change. And maybe it's not this election, but it's the next election where you actually do have a government of the left that is not Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael.
Isn't that the thing, Liam Reid, that the people have so obviously, clearly, absolutely made their views known that the one thing we want is not what we've had. That if any of the parties were to put one of the incumbents back in, either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, they would be
It's always challenging for smaller parties to go in with the larger. And that's why I think I agree. Sinn Féin will be very reluctant to go in, and they'll put a massive high price. And also some of the policies, they'll put policies on, you know, this magic unicorn of cutting taxes while increasing spending, which isn't really going to be feasible and work. So I think it's going to take weeks. I do think that some
of
maybe
the...
I think some of the more progressive parties may coalesce around actually a very, very serious programme for government. I think that may be a possibility. Okay. But I'm not sure that Sinn Féin are going to be there, because I think they may play a solo game on this.
Sorry to cut you off there, but I'm being told I have to go to my last break.
Email late debate at rte.ie.